Happy holidays from all your friends at Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
This is Heather Dubrow from Heather Dubrow's World.
Hey, it's Steve Austin from the Steve Austin Show.
Hey, this is Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana from Riggle's Picks.
This is Caitlin Bristow from Off the Vine.
Hey, this is Kelty from The Lady Gang. Happy holidays from Podcast One.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to make it again. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. Mark Garagus is in transit. Where are you, Mark?
I'm literally in the car on the way to JFK to come back to L.A. because when you listen to the best hour of the universe, you will literally be 48, no, more like 60 hours away from the Carolla Garagus Christmas celebration.
I cannot wait. I have so many questions for you. There's some Flynn questions I'd like to sort out. I also have some questions of a semi-personal nature, but let's talk about Flynn as well.
Well, wait, for 1 second, on a semi-personal nature, can we talk about Tommy John?
Oh, that is semi-personal.
It is semi-personal. Treat yourself and everyone on your list to mind-blowing comfort. Tommy John, most comfortable underwear on the planet, keeps men neat and nestled, I won't even go there, women panty-line and wedgie-free, no wedgie guarantee, comfortable, stay-put waistbands, and luxurious soft fabrics designed to move with you. No bunching, no rolling, no riding up. Wearing mine right now, limited edition, holiday gifts, daily deals. There's something for everyone on your list. Naughty or nice, right, Gary?
That is absolutely right. Give the gift of mind-blowing comfort this holiday season with limited edition holiday gifts from Tommy John. Plus, save 20% on all products at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off.
So, Flynn.
So, where do we start? Do we start with Flynn? Okay, I want to know, I have not appeared. The judge in Flynn's case, for those who don't remember, Flynn was the national security advisor in the White House for Trump. I think he lasted 2 weeks or a month. He was also famous for being on the campaign trail, screaming "lock her up" at rallies and things like that. And was then apparently on the payroll for Turkey, doing their bidding to try and get the cleric Gulen extradited to Turkey, and pled, I don't know, God, it seems like it's been a year, pled about a year ago to a false statements 1001 in concert with Mueller's investigation. And interestingly, was to be sentenced, as you're listening to this past week, by a judge by the name of Emmett Sullivan. Emmett Sullivan, who I've not appeared in front of, but I, in full disclosure, have done a seminar or a presentation with. I've been on a panel with him for, I think, a business trial lawyers in D.C. And I was very impressed with him when I listened to him speak. If I'm not mistaken, Gary can take a look. I think he was also the judge on the prosecution of Ted Stevens. And Gary, you can take a look. And for those of you who don't remember, Ted Stevens was a senator from Alaska and was convicted, but then I think Sullivan threw the conviction out later on. Anyway, so in the run-up to the sentencing, the Mueller recommended no time. The defense lawyers inexplicably not leaving well enough alone, and I don't know who they are, and maybe they can hassle me because for my opinion, but inexplicably at least filed something that said or suggested that he was set up by the FBI when they came to interview him at the White House, and that formed the basis for the 1001. And I remarked to somebody internally at the office the night before the sentencing, I don't think this is going to go well. I don't think this is going to play well with Judge Sullivan. Judge Sullivan is, on the basis of what the man that I heard speak and what I've read about him and the opinions I've read that he's written, I just thought that was a move that was going to backfire. And sure enough, not only did it backfire, but he ended up asking the independent counsel if they'd consider treason in this case, and then postponed sentencing for about 90 days to give Flynn the opportunity to further his quote-unquote cooperation if he himself did not want to end up locked up.
Well, let me tell you my layperson's opinion. First, I want to float this idea. I heard Alan Dershowitz suggest that if you are not under oath, you shouldn't be able to be brought up on perjury charges. What is that? And there's part of me that went, huh? And there's part of me that went, oh. Well, I don't know.
Well,
what
Dershowitz
do you think about that idea?
He's taken a lot of heat in the last week for this. And I wanted to talk to him, and I haven't yet as we're taping this. But he's taken an inordinate amount of heat for two, and he'll probably call me if I misstate it, but I don't think he was talking perjury as much, because you can't get a perjury. Part of the predicate is you got to be under oath. But here you've got somebody who's given being prosecuted for false statements. That's under the 1,000, I think it's 1001 of the U.S. Code. False statements is when the FBI or a governmental agency who meets all the predicates asks you something and you make a false statement to them, they can then prosecute for that. Which is, by the way, one of the reasons that I always say when somebody is talking to law enforcement and it's not being recorded, then you might as well just run headlong into a cement wall, because what is the point of making the statement? And somebody will say, well, I've heard this a million times. If you're just telling the truth, what does it matter? Just tell the truth. And, you know, this is why why Trump has become the party of criminal defense. He will talk about the fact that, you know, it depends on who's truth. And I've had clients, whether it was Greg Anderson in Balco or Susan McDougall, who said, I'm not going to talk to the government, because if I don't say what they think I should say, then they'll set me up for perjury or they'll set me up for false statements. So that's what I think Alan was articulating, is that and the first cousin of that argument, which is, look, if they already knew the answers to the question, why were they asking him? That's not a perjury trap because he wasn't under oath, but a false statements trap. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, no, it makes sense. And when I said perjury, I probably misstated what he was saying.
That was one of your subjects at Loyola when you were teaching last semester.
It just seems like only yesterday. So, if you hear people from the right, they say, look, he did almost nothing. This guy has 30 years of service. This was a trap. They sort of brought him in. Comey said he probably couldn't have gotten away with this with other administrations, but he felt like people weren't paying attention, so he could do it. So the right is crying foul. The left, of course, is saying this guy's dangerous. He needs to be taken off the street. This is treasonous. And their hair's on fire.
I'll tell you why this question cannot be answered and why both the left and the right are wrong. The reaction of Emmett Sullivan leads me to believe that, and this is reading the tea leaves, so I'll wait and see. All of the FBI 302 reports, which is 302 is the fancy number that they always refer to. It's basically a police report by the FBI. FBI, by the way, makes it a practice not to tape record or in any way audio record your conversations, which ought to tell you or speak volumes to begin with. But in addition to that, what ends up happening is when they disclose this to the public, when it becomes public, they, in order to do that, if there's an ongoing investigation, they do what are called redactions. That's the black highlighter that's gone over it. We have not seen what's underneath the redactions. We mean the public. The person who has seen it is obviously the FBI knows it. They wrote it. The special counsel knows it because they filed it. And the defense lawyers for Flynn know it because it has to be disclosed in most cases, although sometimes they will still give the defense lawyer a redacted version. clearly Judge Sullivan knows it. Clearly, whatever was under those redactions caused Judge Sullivan to inquire as to whether they had considered treason. This guy is not somebody who is carrying the government's water. In fact, if Gary will validate the fact that he was on the Stevens process, that he presided over the Stevens prosecution, that was a Republican senator who basically lost his Senate seat because the government was prosecuting him, and he was no friend, and Judge Sullivan was no friend of the government there. And what Judge Sullivan seemed to telegraph, if you want to read the tea leaves, is that there's something in those redactions which is abhorrent, or enough that he invoked the term traitor or treason, even though I think he wanted to claw that back, because you have to have there's a whole argument. You have to have a formal declaration of war as a predicate for treason, and we don't have that with Russia or with Turkey.
Let me just put this in a little nutshell. This judge goes off on Flynn. If you heard it, you'd go, well, this sounds like a lot of hyperbole. It sounds like this guy is some Obama appointee or Clinton appointee that's just basically a hard left guy. He hates Trump. And so he's using a lot of hyperbole in dressing down Flynn. What you're saying is this guy works both sides of the aisle. He's a competent guy. And if he's going to go off like he went off, he must know something that we don't know. So if you're Tucker Carlson, you go, why is this guy going off on this other guy? Because he's got the heavily redacted version of it, but the judge has seen something. And that's your concept. But it makes sense if you know this guy and it doesn't seem like there's enough to set him off, then it must be the redacted material that is setting him off.
You just articulated or distilled down exactly what I always want out of you'd like it out of all judges, but you're never going to get it out of all. But in a federal judge, what you want is what I always call an equal opportunity curmudgeon. I want somebody who is going to not carry the water for the prosecution and who's going to bang the defense as much as he bangs the prosecution. That's what a federal judge should be. That's because you got a lifetime appointment. You're not there to just be a prosecutor in a robe. That's what this guy is. I'm hoping beyond hope that Gary confirms my memory.
Yes he did. Point. Sorry. Yes, he did. Yes. The answer is you were correct and are correct.
Okay.
And she'll always be correct.
For every person on the right wants to say this guy is some soft touch, remember, this is a guy who has a history, documented history, of throwing out the conviction. And if my memory serves me, he referred the prosecutors, and one of the prosecutors, I think, either got frocked or publicly rebuked in that prosecution of the Republican senator for overreaching and not turning over Brady material. This is the kind of guy you want as a district court judge. And if he is concerned, if he thinks there's something here, then that telegraphs to me. I'm willing to lean on that side all day long. So
your memory is again correct.
Yeah, memory. Again, correct. Hey, Gary, you might be able to find some sound bites or snippets from this judge dressing down Flynn and company. The FBI not recording, and you said it by saying that says it all. But if you ask them, why don't you record this? I mean, why don't you sit down and record all these things for safety and accuracy and posterity? Like, what would they say?
Well, hold on. That's where I'm going to tease that answer. You know why I'm going to tease it?
Because you got a cramp now, coming up?
No, I don't have a cramp. I'm now through the Carola Garrigus Christmas party, which, by the way, if you don't know, is December 25th. 23andMe DNA kits are on sale. Huh? Give the gift of genetic discovery to parents, siblings, aunts, grandparents, and everyone on your list. It's easy. I've done it. You just spit into, and when you say spit, it doesn't require that much. Into a tube, they provide it, you register your sample, and in a few weeks you get your personalized online reports. And you know what they don't talk about on this? It includes, they say, 90-plus personalized genetic reports like ancestry composition. I was 99.7% Western Asian, which includes Turkish and Armenian. And I guess the reason they lump them together is because the Turks all were defiling all the Armenian women three generations ago. So where your DNA is from out of the 150-plus regions worldwide, you can find it. And this is another thing I didn't know until I got my result, your wellness, how your genes affect your well-being and your lifestyle. Do you know that? Like sleep movement, genetics may influence moving your arms and legs during sleep. I think there was one that said I had a caffeine tolerance or something. And then there was another one that said, and Adam loves this because I can't mention it, that I have a superior genetic muscle composition, which is now I have genetic proof of the fact that I obviously do not enhance that. But, Gary, have you done it?
That is right. Now through December 25th, get 30% off any 23andMe kit. Order your DNA kit at 23andMe.com/doubt. That's the number 23andMe.com/doubt. Again, 23andMe.com/doubt.
Now, Adam, you were teasing, why don't they do it, right?
Yes, why don't they do it?
Now, this is inexplicable.
No, what I would say, here's what I say to everybody. I get into this a lot in life. We know why they don't do it. My question is if you ask them why they don't do it, what answer would they provide?
And funny you should say that, because I have asked that question not once, not twice, but 10 times while the agent is under oath on the stand in a federal court. And every single time they give the same inane answer, which is it's bureau policy, which, you know, speaks volumes. I've had juries hang just based on that because they didn't buy it. Literally did not buy it.
That's an insane answer. That's almost saying it's literally like saying, why don't you do this? And then their answer is because we don't.
Yeah. And always when you say it's policy, then that takes you down a road because there's always a follow up question until the prosecutor objects. That it's argumentative or some judge cuts your head off. But the follow-up questions are, well, have you ever questioned the policy? Have you ever said, I don't want to be second-guessed later in court by some defense lawyer? Have you ever said, why is it that cops are wearing body cams, but I can't tape record a conversation? And by the way, here's another follow-up question, which drives them crazy. Why is it that you shut down the interview if the subject of the interview, my client, takes out his phone and says, I'm going to record it. Oh, you're not recording it? I'm going to record it. And you shut down the interview.
Well, it's bizarre. It's also a bizarre thing to push forward to the public, who presumably are your bosses, when they just go, hey, we interviewed Hillary Clinton, but we didn't find anything, but we don't have a recording of it. So moving on. It just feels kind of unsatisfying for the people that are paying the bills, right?
Well, I'm telling you, jurors don't like it. I've never understood it. It makes absolutely no sense. Why would you want to have to? And by the way, these are the same people who in the same trial will introduce recordings that their slime bag multi-convicted felons have surreptitiously taped of your client, but when the FBI interviews you or your client, they don't want to wear the wire. So explain that to me, that we'll have this multi-convicted felon wear a wire, but the FBI won't tape it. If you can explain that, you're a better man than I, because I do not understand it. It gives grist for the mill when you're in a trial, and it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Well, the jurors, by nature, at least in theory, all they want is information, and all they want is documented information. And they don't want the old lady who said she peered out of her window on a moonless night and saw what appeared to be that black man sitting over there rob the other white man. They want to see video surveillance footage in color, because that's going to help them reach a conclusion, good or bad, much more accurately than the old lady recalling her recollection of what happened so many nights ago. So now I get it. If you're Bill Clinton is talking to Loretta Lynch on a tarmac, you go, hey, no one was rolling on it. We'll take their word for what they talked about. They talked about the grandkids and golf. Fine. But if you go into headquarters and you sit down in their facility, it's unimaginable that there's no.
Well, how about the fact that this is the one, and I've asked it. Let me see if I got this right, Special Agent. You decided to go surprise my client at their office on a Friday afternoon, correct? Yes. You had a partner with you, yes. You and your partner knew when you left the Veterans Boulevard FBI office address in Westwood that you were going downtown to interview my client. Yes. So you had to get a car, right? You had to get the keys to the car, yeah. And you knew you were going to interview the person, yes. And you wanted him to say statements or make statements that would assist your investigation, yes. And while you were wanting him to do that, you didn't want to give him a heads up. You didn't call him first and say, hey, I'm going to be there in 30 minutes, did you know? You wanted to go there because you wanted to get his unvarnished, unthought about, unfiltered views, correct? Yes. Well, then, by the way, do you guys have wiretapping recording devices over there? Yes. You got them in your locker, right? Yes. And whenever you've got an informant or a CHS, a confidential human source, you wire them up, don't you? Yes. But you didn't take any of those devices with you before you went to have this surprise conversation to memorialize it? Nope. And why didn't you? Because it's Bureau policy.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it works. Look, maybe it works against them half the time, because if I'm the juror and I just hear that exchange, I'm like, well, I'm not going to believe much that comes out of this guy's mouth.
Exactly. And by the way, there's a separate jury instruction that says that an oral admission or confession should be viewed with caution. So on top of it, the law is that you're supposed to tell the jury that you're to view the statement with caution, but they count on, or what is counted on, I assume, is that in spite of the fact that you, when at least you get jury board, when you ask jurors, you know, you're not going to give a leg up to law enforcement just because the law enforcement, oh, no, I'd never do that, that obviously they think they would. What's the incentive for the officer to lie? Why would a cop lie? Why would he get up on a stand and jeopardize his career and lie and not tell the truth about what the person said when they didn't take over their recording device?
Well, if you said to me, what would be the motivation for a cop to lie? I would say, I don't know, maybe zero, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened a million times in the last 10 minutes. So,
yeah, and by the way,
with that in mind,
does the cop want to look like a fool?
Right.
My father used to say, instead of protect and serve, it ought to say to arrest and convict on the side of the cop car, because that's the, you know, that's their job. If they've got any kind of a gene in them that wants them to succeed, they don't want to lose all their cases. They want to win all their cases, even though arguably they're supposed to be seeking justice.
So
you know
what? Yeah.
About justice? Let me tell you one thing. Leg or foot cramps?
Oh, there we go.
You need justice, right?
Sure.
You know how painful they can be. Literally, when I get a calf, it jolts me out of a sound sleep and interrupts my daily life because it hurts for the rest of the day. No more. I don't have them anymore. You know why?
TheraWorks Relief. That's
yep.
Right.
With an X, not a K. TheraWorks with an X Relief. Now, non-greasy foam proven to relieve muscle cramps fast, and boy do I mean fast, reduce muscle soreness. Plus, with daily use, TheraWorks Relief can prevent muscle cramps before they start. Only minutes to apply, absorbs quickly, and works. You know who talks about it endlessly.
Dr. Drew.
Dr. Drew. He's been talking about this all over TV. Holidays are here. No better gift for someone who suffers with muscle cramps or soreness. Get TheraWorks with an X Relief today. Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, or your pharmacist. Learn more at THERAWORKSRELIEF.com. TheraWorks.
So, Mark, just to wrap up Flynn here, what was Comey doing? Was he trying to set him up? Did he already know what he needed to know? What was Comey's?
I think it's clear that they had suspicions. I mean, when you put this all together, if what is being reported, and that's a what if, some caution, but supposedly Obama warned Trump about Flynn, supposedly Sally Yates, who you refer to as that handsome woman.
Best neck in the business.
Warned them about Flynn, and it's obvious to me that they had him on wiretaps and they knew that there was something untoward going on. And I will disclose that the fact that this guy was taking money from the Turks gives me, he becomes presumed guilty in my eyes because that Turkish propaganda campaign is ridiculous. And I think on the inauguration day, he was writing an op-ed. There was nothing more than the guy was just getting a check from the Turks who were laundering the money through that that one thing. So he doesn't get a whole lot of sympathy from me because it looks like he had an axe to grind that was being, and the axe had been bought and paid for by a foreign government. And that's, I understand the guy's had 30 years of great service and more power to him, but there's something about the whole thing that I think just smells bad.
Who's next now?
Harvey Weinstein's got to be next because just this week, just as we're taping this on Friday, just yesterday, Ben went in with his motion to dismiss, and without so much as any oral argument, the judge issued a ruling which was, in my humble opinion, legally less than satisfying, but to some degree predictable in the sense that most state court judges in a case like this is a good contrast from somebody like Emmett Sullivan. Most state court judges, in the face of what is arguably clear prosecutorial misconduct, are still going to err on the side of not holding them accountable. And that's one of the problems when you're dealing with somebody in state court. I will harken back to the murder case that I've been talking about for three episodes in a row. It took nine jurors. And by the way, yesterday, the prosecution stood up and said, and formally dismissed or said they were not going to proceed on the murder. But it took nine jurors to do what nine state court judges couldn't do or couldn't bring themselves to do, which is to say, no, this is not a murder case, and you shouldn't expose a then 17-year-old kid to a lifetime sentence just because that's what you want to do. It's not the right thing to do. And from the standpoint of Harvey, it's fairly this could not, I don't think this would have happened if it were in California. California's got a pretty robust body of law that says, if you're going to go to the grand jury and you're going to deprive, because understand what happens. In California, when you've got a felony offense, you've got to do what's called a probable cause proceeding. So normally in California, in the state court, that is a preliminary hearing. When they do a preliminary hearing, they've got to do, they put witnesses up. It's in a courtroom where you get to cross-examine. Rarely, but they sometimes do, the state court will take somebody to a grand jury. If they take somebody to a grand jury, then under California law, there's an old case, Johnson, which has got progeny, they've got to disclose Brady material. If something untoward happened or if it looks like the person had some piece of evidence that points towards their innocence, you've got to present that to the grand jury. You just can't hoodwink them. And unfortunately, in New York, the law is not as robust. And so that's why you've got the situation, in my opinion, with Harvey Weinstein. And, the judge's feeling is that let it for the jurors decide. Let the jurors make the decision.
The So, but your prediction is that Harvey is not going to see the inside of a prison cell.
I do not see how they get a conviction on Harvey Weinstein, the emails that I've seen based on which are the exhibits to the publicly filed motions to dismiss by Brofman.
Might it be a sort of OJ situation where he doesn't get convicted and go to prison, but there's a civil trial?
Yes. I think that there's going to be, even if he gets out of harm's way in the criminal, you're always going to have the exposure to the civil. But, you know, the email evidence, and I have read it because I have a great interest in it. And obviously, Teddy works in Brofman's office, even though she's not working on the case. I look at it because I'm curious. And to my mind, the email evidence is absolutely 100% inconsistent, controvert, exculpatory, whatever word you want to put on it. There's no way you read those emails and say, unless somebody has just had a Men in Black erasure of their memory or they've had a frontal lobotomy, I don't understand the argument where you say this is consistent with somebody in a he said, she said. It just makes absolutely no sense. It could be because there's a whole new version of rape that I don't understand that now occurs. But the fact remains, if you look at these emails and if jurors look at these emails, I don't think that most jurors are going to say or going to come back and say, yeah, beyond a reasonable doubt, I think a rape occurred or non-consensual sex occurred. It makes no sense.
Speaking of New York, I think they have a new attorney general, if that's a correct term.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And
a previous attorney general had a his own close encounters.
And
that guy's name, Schneiderman. Thank you, Teddy. Schneiderman had to resign in quite a hurry. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
The new attorney general just announced, I'm declaring war on anyone with the last name Trump, which.
Well, and boy, Trump, the investigation resulted already in a stipulation, meaning both sides agreed to unwind the charity or the foundation. So I don't know what they had, although if you look at the press release by the new attorney general, sure looks like they had something because that was quite a quick waving of the white flag.
Well, whether it's the Trump Foundation or the Clinton Foundation, does it ever really hold up to real scrutiny? Is it?
No. No. I mean, look at you. We could name legitimate, and I say that pun intended, charities, and some of them, when they do, when you get an in depth investigation, God knows what the person. The close to administrative expenses, right? It's always feathering their own nest.
Well, it's a system that basically says, look, a bunch of people are going to cut you a bunch of checks and no one's going to ask any questions about where their money went. They're just giving you the money and they're writing it off and they're moving on. And then we will rely on you to do the right thing with this money. And they'll go, yeah, I'll do the right thing, but I could definitely use some nicer furnishings for my office first. You know, I mean, how am I going to run this charity?
I have a portrait of myself that I could bid on. So.
Right. I can't focus on the charity without being surrounded by mahogany with raised panels. So anytime anyone says we're going to look in, I would be curious to find out what organization that somebody said, I'm going to get a fine-tooth comb and a jeweler's loop, and I'm really going to go through you. I would hold up to that scrutiny. Well, I'm sure the March of Dimes would, but Clinton Foundation, Trump Organization, Foundation, well, no way.
You know, it's an ironic thing because, and one of the problems with the way I believe that Trump has handled this, and I always, by the way, come back to, as you know, and the listeners know. I always come back to Clinton because I think Clinton handled all these investigations so much brighter in a lot of ways, although made some major missteps along the way. But at least if you're Trump or Trump's people, you would think you would have looked at Whitewater or looked at Watergate as a pretty good roadmap for where the prosecution was headed. And by the way, you know, federal prosecutors, God love them, only have, they're like civil, big firm civil lawyers. And by the way, most of them worked at a big civil firm, big civil firm for 2 years before they became prosecutors. And both of those universes are populated by people who've only got about 20 moves, and most of them can't think on their feet. They're stellar Ivy League law school graduates who want trial experience, and the way they get trial experience is to pile on some unsuspecting person in federal court, and then they go out and get a large partnership track bonus as they recycle into a large firm. But they don't have that many moves. Their moves are only, I mean, literally, we joke all the time, you know, oh, it's move number 7, it's move number 10. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like Groundhog Day with these people. And I understand Trump's reaction and kind of this flailing around is like he doesn't like to be constrained and he wants to do it kind of as the hard knuckles or bare knuckles New York state court civil practice, but that does not translate well. And he has not been well served by the approaches he's been taking. And literally, I look at him, he's in a legal death spiral. I just don't understand what he's doing. None of this makes any sense.
Well, a couple things. He has a lot of bravado, and it may be his undoing. I mean, I think you would tell us firsthand as an attorney, if you have a client where you go, listen, take this, listen to me, don't talk about that, and they go, screw that, I'll handle this. That's probably the worst news you could ever hear when you're advising somebody, right?
Right, exactly. And in fact, I often will say, look, if you're so smart, why are you paying me money? Go do it yourself. Or the other, you know, old saw that I'll trade out is, look, if you had cancer and you go to an oncologist who specializes in your form of cancer, are you going to go get a second opinion from, you know, your gardener's cousin? I don't even understand it. Why? What are you doing?
So, I mean, Trump has bravado, and for lack of a better term, he's been going, you know, Jimmy Carter didn't grow up like Donald Trump, and his adult life wasn't like Donald Trump, and neither was anybody. So they didn't, Trump has been used to sort of doing whatever he wants to do whenever he wants to do it and saying whatever he wants to say, wherever he wants to say it for the last 40 years. And now we're telling him switch course and do things this way. And he says, well, what do you mean? I'm the guy who does whatever I want and says whatever I want. And I always land on my feet. So that's what I'm going to do. The question that I'm going to tease out to you is when the dust settles on this entire, you know, what Trump, if Trump is a civilian, even though his name is on all the buildings, he gets to sort of fly under the radar to some degree. He has painted a bullseye on his back, agitated everybody who just takes people down for a living. They'll take you down whether it's appropriate or not, as you know. Well, I don't mean appropriate, but what I'm saying is you take these entities, you agitate these entities, and these entities can ruin your life whether you've done anything wrong or not, and especially if you've done something wrong. When this all settles, is that a correct statement?
It's an absolutely correct statement. And here, I'll distill down like you did with me, I'll do it with you. It's those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, and especially shouldn't throw stones at the ones who have the howitzers and the badges.
Right. So now I'll tease this. At the end of the day, when the dust settles and Trump's somewhere that he doesn't want to be, or looking back on the past 4 years or 3 years or X amount of years, is he going to think, I should have never done this? I should have never ran for president.
You're teasing that, and yes, then I'll answer.
I would be so much more happy. I could be banging a prostitute in Trump Tower right now. Instead, I'm wherever I am. All right, Tommy John. We all wear Tommy Johns around here. I'm wearing mine right now. I don't leave the house without my Tommy Johns. And I will tell you this, most comfortable underwear on the planet. The undershirts are the best as well. Keeps you neat and nestled, and it keeps the women panty line and wedgie free. No wedgie guarantee. Comfortable stay put waistbands, luxurious soft fabrics designed to move with you. We all wear them here. We all have them here, and nobody's going anywhere without their Tommy Johns. And once you get into Tommy Johns, you never go back to your old underwear. You will not. It is simply the best. They have limited edition gifts, holiday gifts, and deals out there still for everyone. So go ahead to TommyJohn.com. Right, Gary?
That is absolutely right. Give the gift of mind-blowing comfort this holiday season with limited edition holiday gifts from Tommy John. Plus, save 20% on all products at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off.
So
let me tell you, Howard Stern, I think, famously said, and Howard has had Trump on innumerable times over the years, and there is you can YouTube it, watch it. Howard said this was, he had predicted what a mistake this would be for him, for Trump, and he's been spot on, proven by it. Look, if they want you, they can get you. I've repeated it 25 times. In fact, the guy who first coined it, or at least most famously coined it, they got him, was Judge Kuczynski in the Ninth Circuit, who was the one-time chief judge who they took down for apparently sexual harassment, who said there isn't any adult walking around who, if the federal prosecutor is trained on you, couldn't find three violations that you'd committed. So that's the awesome power of the prosecution. That's why we want always prosecutors to exercise discretion so that they don't do stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons that this was such a Trump knew this, too. There's a certain amount of hubris in this. When he started saying like statements like the red line you don't cross to Mueller is my personal finances, then he knows there's a problem with the personal finances. I mean, nobody makes that statement unless they've got enough self-awareness to understand that that's a bridge too far. So when you make that statement, you have a lot less empathy or sympathy for somebody because they pretty much point it out. It's the same reason I say, for Trump voters who say, well, I never realized it was going to be this bad. Well, come on. If he didn't turn over his tax returns, what were you thinking? Did you think there was going to be something good in the tax returns or that there wasn't something he was hiding? And by the way, it would have taken, can you imagine the stack and how high the tax returns are? So I can see both sides of this. He says, I went to Washington. And his supporters will say, I went to Washington because I wanted to shake it up. I didn't want business as usual. Well, you can't be the law and order president and then torch law and order because law and order is going to come back and bite you in the butt. Those are the most vindictive humans there are. And so you can't go over there and say, I love cops. I love cops. I love the border control. And then start talking about the FBI being a cesspool. It doesn't work that way. You can knock them off individually. You can knock off the lovely, what was her name, Lisa Page. You can knock off her lover, but you can not. You can fire Comey, but they're kind of like Transformers. They'll just keep coming back at you. They're like, it's like zombie apocalypse, except it's prosecution apocalypse. They just keep coming at you. You can kill some, and they just keep coming. So understand that if you're going to be that guy, you better wish that you were Jimmy Carter as opposed to having a trail behind you like Donald Trump.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter has... I think he just has like peanut shells and a brother that drinks too much beer behind him or was.
Yeah, really. But, you know, it's interesting because at the end of the day, what does that mean you get in politics? Who would subject themselves to be a politician? You've got to get the biggest nerd, biggest geek who's never done anything, who's probably never had sex. But then if you get somebody like Mike Pence, who you think is squeaky clean, you know that photo the other day of Pence looking so angry with Schumer and Pelosi in the room? Did you see that one?
Yeah.
The video clip? You know, it does not – part of what has been kind of lost in all of this also is the cooperation by the woman whose name escapes me, who just pled into a cooperation agreement, who was a Russian spy herself and articulated a factual basis. What's her name?
I can't think of it. She was sent over here. She was going to
infiltrate. Martina,
She was going to infiltrate.
Maria
Butina. She was going to get in the NRA. She said she wanted to do like a Russian version of the NRA. That one?
Yeah, exactly. And she's... You know, follow the money there, too. That might be one of the reasons that Pence looks so filled with consternation as he's looking at Nancy Pelosi. Because if you look at the Constitution, if Trump's gone and Pence is gone, then you start talking about the first female president is President Pelosi. And he looked like that's what he was imagining as he was sitting there. And there's some shenanigans with the NRA and their political pack already, and the governor of, I think it was Missouri. So if you start connecting all the dots, and remember, Pence was a governor as well. And by the way, the DOJ policy against indicting a president, which I don't think has force of law, it's just the DOJ policy. There's nothing, and to my mind, I don't think that there's anything that says you can't go after the vice president. Exhibit A is Spiro Agnew. And at first I thought that maybe the reason that Pence's chief of staff didn't take, I think, what was his name, Nick Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, that he didn't take the chief of staff job when John Kelly resigned was because he wanted to go spend more time with his family. Usually when they say they want to go spend more time with their family, that is a six-month early indicator that there's some law enforcement interest in you. And so I'm not so sure that Pence isn't getting scrutinized as well.
What'd you think about Trump rolling the cameras on that meeting?
The whole thing was astonishing. And Pence's reaction to me was actually Pence's reaction and Schumer hanging his head. And then I love Pelosi coming out with the name of the designer red coat that she was wearing when she had her with those Ray-Bans when she put them on, looking kind of threat matrix threat look. She was coming out of the White House. The whole thing was just a beautiful reality series to me. He's a master of it. I think one of the reasons he's pulling out of Afghanistan, one of the reasons he's announced that he's pulling out of the Syria as well, I think it's a deflection. I think that I had predicted that right after the election, it was going to be 8 weeks of buckle up, and it sure hasn't disappointed. And I think there's more to come.
Now how do you think Schumer and Pelosi came across in that meeting?
I think Pelosi was lionized by the left because she made that statement Which I do not give her a whole. I just did. I thought that was over the top. But Schumer, I don't know what. Schumer looked like somebody who had just been beaten.
Well, oh, her.
I didn't understand that. I mean,
was it her statement?
I didn't get it.
The statement you're talking about is her saying the wall was immoral?
Yeah.
Well,
then she said something about, don't you tell me how to, I don't know. It was just something that that I just thought fed into his base. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. I know that it fed into her base too, but I think it would have been a lot more, a softer touch in terms of humor might have worked better.
It's a weird, the whole border thing is always confusing to me because when you say the wall's immoral and then you say it's not going to work, but I'm sort of like, well, then it's not immoral because if it's not going to work, it's not going to. It's not immoral.
It's impractical.
It's impractical.
Right, exactly. I know. But it's there's just so much to this. Our immigration policy through this administration is in various areas more unforgiving than previous administrations. But the previous administrations were crazy, and I'm specifically talking about Obama. Those 2 4-year terms were much crazier, at least for clients that I dealt with, than the last 4 years of George W. Bush. George W. Bush and the immigration issue was a lot easier. The law was a lot better to deal with than during the Obama administration. The Obama administration, it got so bad that you had to have Article 3 federal district court judges imposing 180-day detention limits. That didn't happen during Trump. That happened during Obama. And that was something that we were never facing. Well, I shouldn't say never, because you would. There were these interminably long things where you just keep people in these detention camps during W. But it really reached an intolerable point during Obama.
Yeah, I know, and it's rarely. Well, it gets brought up by the right, but it does not get brought up by
the left.
Well,
they do. I think one of the most effective things they can do to give everybody, and I mean both on the left and the right, you want to give them a good body check, just pull out the old. You can do it for Obama and see him back in 2006 and what he was saying about immigration. You can do the same thing with Lindsey Graham in 1999, what he was saying about Clinton. I don't know why these guys aren't held accountable more often and more mainstream for how they take these ridiculous positions that are completely at odds with one another within the span of 10 or 20 years. And it's not like they're evolving, because they clearly don't evolve.
Well, the thing that's insane about the supposition of evolving, the person is, you know, not Obama, not President Obama's, per se, but I mean, the person was 53 when they made the statement, and now they're 62. How much evolvement on policy do you make in your mid 50s?
No, it's the opposite. You become even more hardened, don't you find? I mean,
unless you're
trailing behind me in age, but I will tell you, I become more hardened
as
I get older. I don't soften. I soften up in some areas, but it's certainly not on policy.
Yes, you don't rethink these things. You tend to dig in unless you're looking for some votes. All right. Well, if you're getting too hard up there, Mark, you get some TheraWorks going. Leg.
I'd like to massage some of that foam on my calf right now.
Your Neanderthal muscular calves.
Exactly. My 23andMe ancestral muscle composition combined with TheraWorks, and I'll have to put a Tommy John over it.
Oh, my God. What, coming full circle. TheraWorks Relief, non-greasy foam, proven to relieve muscle cramps fast, reduce muscle soreness. Plus, with daily use, TheraWorks Relief can prevent muscle cramps before they start. Takes only minutes to apply, absorbs quickly, and works. Dr. Drew's been talking about this on TV, and you see him all the time talking about TheraWorks Relief. Holidays are here. It's time to get a real gift for a person that needs it. TheraWorks Relief. You can get them at TheraWorks Relief at Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, or just talk to your pharmacist. Learn more at TheraWorksRelief.com. Mark, are you throwing a Christmas party on Christmas?
On Christmas Day, you and Lynette and the kids will be there. Bring Phil by. I want to see Phil wrestle this year with Brady and Giglio.
Okay. But I feel bad because they end up in the swimming pool.
I know, but it's going to be hilarious to watch the three of them. They'll be like, because, you know, that pack mentality goes even, it's exponential when you put three of them together.
All right, we shall be there with bells on.
See you at 5 o'clock. I'll break out. You have your choice this year. It'll be your choice of a Mac 25 or a Don Julio 1942.
Well, I'll just say we should do both.
By the way, for giving them that free plug, they ought to send us a couple of bottles.
I concur. Thursday, January 28th, me at the Irvine Improv with David Zucker, who made Airplane. Breaking down Airplane in our basic cable commentary. I got some live shows coming up, I think, in Boston at the Wilbur Theater and some other places like that. Just go to adamcarolla.com, find it. Say hi to Lynette at Corolla Drinks. Mark, what do you got?
I'm Mediterranean Tapas at 10E in downtown L.A., Engine Company 28, downtown L.A., Terminal 8 at LAX. We've got Prova at Grand Central Terminal, I've been corrected on this, and opening next month in Times Square, Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, Gary's favorite place to go, and the V Palm Springs. Mentioned Reasonable Doubt this week, and they may give you something for free.
Well, have some safe travels, and we'll see you on Christmas. Until next time, Adam Kroll for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.